Rock Jock Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mintz. Today is the first of our summer series. We are going to be talking about sports topics as usual as they come up, kind of like we did last year. But this is going to be highlighted, I think, by some of our strange and kind of off-the-wall episodes that we do have. But this first episode is just sports as usual. Obviously, the NFL draft happened this last weekend. And while I wanted to try to talk with both of the teams where Kansas players were selected or signed as undrafted free agents, I was actually only able to get in touch with one. So while I'm hoping to talk with someone Cincinnati-related to talk about Hakeem Adeniji and his possibilities of making that roster, today we are starting by talking about the Dallas Cowboys, who Azur Kamara signed with. I have RJ Ochoa. He's the manager over at Blogging the Boys, the SB Nation site that covers the Cowboys. He is coming on to talk with us about Kamara, what his opportunity is to make the roster. Also talking about Dorrance Armstrong and a little bit about Daniel Wise, who was with the team up until the offseason. So I don't want to belabor this process of getting you guys over to the interview, but we will get you guys over there.
And I'm here now with RJ Ochoa. He is the manager over at Blogging the Boys, which is the SB Nation site that covers the Dallas Cowboys. RJ, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's been an energetic day for my dog, which is always an interesting time around my house. And I had a peanut butter and banana sandwich for lunch. So all in all, I'm feeling pretty awesome, if I'm being truly honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those are the little things, especially during this quarantine time, that you really have to look forward to. I have two dogs myself that are very, very hyper throughout the day. And luckily, my wife manages them while I'm trying to get some work done, because otherwise it would be absolutely a disaster for me trying to do any kind of meetings or anything like that. So I understand how interesting those kind of days can be. So obviously, we're here to talk about, you know, this is draft season. It's kind of all done there and undrafted free agent signing. The reason we're talking with you is because of Azur Kamara, you know, Kansas, I guess, whether you want to call him a linebacker or kind of defensive lineman, he's kind of that hybrid guy, but he did sign an undrafted free agent contract with the Dallas Cowboys. You know, and so I kind of wanted to talk to you just a little bit about, you know, that signing. What do Cowboys fans or the Cowboys expect from him? And what kind of does this pathway look like to be able to either make the roster or the practice squad?
Well, so he's a player that I think a lot of people are really excited about. You know, for people that don't follow the NFL as well, it's difficult to make a team as an undrafted free agent. You know, it's not that common of a thing. However, the Cowboys have really generally, you know, I'd say you could almost average a spot on their roster every year comes from that group. Tony Romo was very famously an undrafted free agent. Miles Austin was an undrafted free agent. Dan Bailey, who's one of the best kickers in franchise's history, was an undrafted free agent. And so they're certainly, you know, very, very, very well versed in those waters. They've obviously pulled some Kansas players in recent memory, so they've obviously had their eyes, you know, over there in terms of, you know, what that program offers. And I think that, you know, he's in an interesting position when it comes to his position, because the Cowboys, from an edge rush perspective, they have DeMarcus Lawrence, who's one of the best defenders in the NFL. And then outside of that, they don't have anything that's a real certain sure thing. They have a couple of players, a couple of veterans. Tyrone Crawford has been a team captain for a long time, and he's going to take up a roster spot. Dorrance Armstrong, another Jayhawk, is certainly in the mix there as well, although there are people that kind of have him, people already kind of doing roster predictions, and some have Dorrance on the bubble. And then the Cowboys, you know, for anybody who does follow the NFL, have two players that are conceivably at some point going to be reinstated by the NFL, although that's technically up in the air, in Randy Gregory, who played at Nebraska, obviously, and Alden Smith, who's had an interesting career, to say the least, to this point in his life. But I would put it as at a lower odd, you know, than another position, in terms of the undrafted free agents that they've brought in. But I think definitely a candidate to ultimately end up on the practice squad. That's where the Cowboys, just like a lot of teams, like to sort of grow and develop players. And, it is worth mentioning, certainly, that rosters in the NFL have grown. They used to be 53 players, but starting this season, they're 55. So that does open at the very least two more spots, and therefore technically does increase the likelihood of Kamara making the roster.
Yeah, I mean, and coming out of Kansas, you know, Kamara was being talked about as a potential seventh round pick or, you know, kind of an undrafted free agent. And it seemed like he was made a priority. From what I understand, you know, he had several different options, and the Cowboys were the ones that pursued him the most aggressively, from what I'm hearing. And so it definitely seemed like there was a lot of people that were intrigued by what he could do and intrigued by what he's able to bring from a development sense. I think the general consensus is that whether he was picked in the draft or, you know, he was signed as an undrafted free agent, he was going to be a project, a development project. He wouldn't, even if he were able to make a roster, he would probably be kind of limited impact on special teams, or like way down on the depth chart, kind of, you know, emergency only type of duty in actual games. And so, you know, I think that's a fair assessment. He showed in his time at Kansas that, you know, he has kind of a nose for the ball. He has some versatility, which is always a plus when you're, you know, if you can play a couple different positions and kind of move around in different schemes, you know, especially as defenses kind of go to less specific positions and more of like position groups that you can rotate around in. Someone that can do those sorts of things is definitely has a leg up on some of the other competition, especially in a development sense. But, you know, I don't think anyone, Jayhawk fan, expected him to be able to come in and really be pushing for a certain spot. The expectation was that he was going to find a good practice squad and kind of develop for a year or so. I guess the question is, given what you know, and I'm not sure how much of actual breaking down what Azur Kamara has been able to bring, you've done, but based on what you know about him, where do you think he kind of slots in? Do you think he would be more of a linebacker or kind of more trying to fill in on the defensive line? Or is it going to depend on kind of how other players pan out over the next year or two?
Well, it's funny that this subject would kind of be the one of main interest, because that's sort of an existential crisis that the Cowboys are experiencing themselves. I mean, they've been a 4-3 defensive front for a long time now, and I'm certain that everybody's aware that they've changed head coaches this offseason. Now Mike McCarthy is in charge, and the Cowboys have a new defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, who, former San Francisco 49ers head coach, and has spent time more recently coaching the linebackers with the New Orleans Saints. And so Mike Nolan is coming in and has run some 3-4 fronts before, and a lot of people have kind of thought and you know, speculated that maybe the Cowboys would be doing that. Now, you know, obviously that's a big deal for somebody like DeMarcus Lawrence, who's the Cowboys' number one edge rusher. Is, you know, it was just last year that they gave him a big time contract, and you know, you don't want to do that and then all of a sudden change the way he plays the game from a technical perspective. But there are some, you know, thoughts or writings on the wall that while the Cowboys might not shift entirely to a 3-4 front, that they might involve some 3-4 principles. And so I think in situations like that, I think everybody's well aware of Jalen Smith, the former Notre Dame linebacker who had the medical issue that is now a Cowboys linebacker. And so there's been talk, for example, of using Jalen Smith as this kind of hybrid. He did rush the passer while as a member of the Fighting Irish. And so I think that's the avenue for Kamara. I mean, if he were to make the roster, I think, as you know, the Cowboys are clearly looking for kind of hybrid guys, and if that's a quality that he possesses and shows them, you know, obviously there's a lot up in the air given the world's current climate, but if he's able to kind of prove that the Cowboys, I should say, they absolutely love position flexibility. They love when a guy can do multiple things, and so if Kamara can do that, I think that certainly helps him more than it does anybody else. And I think that I think ultimately they might view him as an edge rusher just because the Cowboys have so many options at linebacker. And I think that's probably his best pure shot of making the roster. You know, if Randy Gregory or Alden Smith were to not get reinstated, for example, that would all of a sudden open up two edge rusher spots. But I think that's what makes sense as of now, but obviously a lot could change.
Yeah, definitely. And again, if you're picked in the late part of the draft or an undrafted free agent, you're usually kind of looking to jump into one of those development slots. You know, making the opportunity to kind of jump into the practice squad, you know, and Kansas players have done that several times successfully in the past. And like you said, you know, Dallas seems to find guys in that kind of role and kind of promote them. But, you know, talking specifically, I guess, well, in terms of Azur Kamara, was there anything else that kind of intrigued you either in what you've looked at afterwards? Or was he a guy that you were kind of were looking at maybe as like a late round pick for the Cowboys because of anything specific, or did he kind of just come out of nowhere?
I think he kind of came out of nowhere. And, you know, when the draft ends, it is actually a very exciting time because that's when the undrafted free agents start to roll in. You know, that first hour as soon as the draft is over is very fun and very exciting from that perspective. And, you know, so much of understanding the Cowboys, for example, is about understanding devotion of resources. That's why, you know, for example, the Cowboys took CeeDee Lamb with their first round pick. And so now we kind of have an idea of sort of how they want to build their team, if that makes sense. And so seeing the priority that they place on undrafted free agents tells us how much they care about a guy, to be quite frank. And to be honest about myself, I'm a Texas A&M alum, and so I was really interested in the Cowboys landing Courtney Davis, and he teased them by initially agreeing to terms with them and then heading to the Minnesota Vikings. But looking at the bonus money that the Cowboys have handed out to these undrafted free agents is often telling of the team's intentions. And to be frank, Kamara has been given a $5,000 bonus, whereas you look at Rondo Carter is an edge rusher out of James Madison. The Cowboys also drafted their quarterback, Ben DiNucci, in the seventh round. He was given a $20,000 bonus. And so when you look at it that way, I mean, I think it's easy to understand that the Cowboys certainly seem to value Rondo Carter more than they do Kamara, potentially as an edge rusher. I mean, these are just examples. But if you did value Kamara as a linebacker, they did give Francis Bernard, the linebacker, a $10,000 bonus. And so I think that Kamara was a lower priority for them in terms of just the initial wave, but that doesn't at all mean that he can't climb the ladder and, you know, shock people. That happens all the time. I mean, honestly, you know, a lot of players for the Cowboys last year, I mean, from the Big 12, Luke Gifford was an undrafted free agent linebacker from Nebraska that ultimately made the team. And so, I mean, anything is possible. And it tends to happen to this particular team more than others.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that is kind of one of the intricacies, I think, that a lot of people, especially if you're not, you know, diving deep into kind of even, and well, even your general NFL fan doesn't necessarily understand that. And yeah, the low bonus amount, I'm also wondering, you know, based on, well, I guess my limited understanding of how this works is that certain teams have different, I guess, bonus flexibility or, you know, slots that they have for people. And sometimes it's literally just about, you know, it's not necessarily so much about the bonus money. It's about, you know, having a real opportunity. So the fact that they're not offering as much bonus money may not even necessarily really weigh into anything. It's just one of the few indications we actually have. You know, like I've heard of guys who say that, well, I had more bonus money from this team, but I think I have a better chance of making a roster on this other team, so I went with that one instead.
Totally.
It's a little weird how many different things kind of play into this. It's a lot different than something like, you know, college commitment, because a lot of times there you're looking at, you know, playing time. And that's like the one main thing that you can get from a college program, as opposed to all the different kind of competing interests, I think, that there might be with signing an undrafted free agent contract. So,
right. And I think that's well said. And I think it should also be said that, you know, oftentimes recruitment is kind of, you know, this is a recruitment sort of process. It's the closest thing that professional football has to recruitment on the college level. And to be frank, again, you know, it's possible that, you know, the Cowboys, you know, needed the extra bonus money to woo whatever player because they felt more confident that they could woo Kamara without it. You know, I mean, all right. Social science all of a sudden plays a role there. Maybe Kamara's a, you know, grown up a Cowboys fan. You know what I mean? All these things play a factor that, you know, everybody's trying to, you know, everybody's trying to pay as little as they can for everything in life. And it could just be a symptom of that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I did want to go ahead and actually ask about Dorrance Armstrong and then Daniel Wise, who was on the roster, but is not currently at this point anymore. But before I do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk podcast. And we're back. All right. So obviously we just got done talking about the new addition to, you know, in terms of Azur Kamara, but Dorrance Armstrong has been with the team now, you know, for a little while, was drafted by the Cowboys, and has actually been playing for them. I do remember his name being called in a few of the games that I've watched. And full disclosure, I'm not a Cowboys fan. My wife is. But prior to getting married, I absolutely hated the Cowboys. So I've at least come to tolerate them now. So I pay attention to them a little bit more than I used to. But now I'm mainly kind of looking for players that I recognize or that I particularly like. And Dorrance Armstrong has had a few good plays that I specifically remember coming from this last season or so. But what is the general feeling of Dorrance Armstrong and what he brings to the team, and how do fans view him now?
Well, so first of all, I can't believe I haven't said this. I live in San Antonio, so Kansas holds a very special spot in my heart, given the 2008 Final Four. So that was a good time here in the Alamo City. So just, you know, shout out to the Jayhawks. I'm not the biggest college basketball fan, and my school is not that great in it, but I enjoy Blue Bloods, and so I certainly enjoy Kansas in that capacity. But so Dorrance Armstrong, for anybody that's not aware, was actually given what a lot of people affectionately referred to as sort of a kiss of death his rookie season, because he was given number 74 during the, you know, initial rookie mini camps and training camp period. And for anybody who's unaware, 74 has only ever been worn by one player in Dallas Cowboys history, and it was the team's first draft pick, Bob Lilly, who affectionately earned the nickname Mr. Cowboy. He's a Hall of Famer. He's in the team's Ring of Honor. And the Cowboys, while they don't have any numbers retired, they do avoid handing out certain numbers. I mean, I think everybody understands, you know, 8 for Troy Aikman, 22 for Emmitt Smith, so on and so forth. And so Dorrance Armstrong, though, you know, so the point is, if they give that number out to a rookie, they're not envisioning him making the team, because he's not going to be wearing 74, you know, during the regular season. But Dorrance fought through that and impressed a lot of people his rookie season. And I, especially during the training camp and preseason period, made the team, switched to 92, and last season kind of not disappeared, but I don't know that the opportunities were there. I mean, I mentioned, you know, the Cowboys have DeMarcus Lawrence, and that's, you know, 50% of opportunities belong directly to him. And so I don't know that there's been a really strong bite at the apple that he's been able to have. I think it's fair to wonder that he could be a casualty, you know, when this team ultimately trims down to 55 players after the preseason. But he has shown a lot, and this is a team that could be in need of edge rushers if Randy Gregory and Aldon Smith are, you know, at the point of you and I talking, at least, they are not technically available to them. There's a possibility that, you know, Dorrance Armstrong is in that, you know, hypothetical, the week one starting defensive end opposite of DeMarcus Lawrence. Now, if they're returning, that really changes everything. I mean, if they return, that could take him, as you know, amazing as it sounds, from starting to completely off the team in general, because so much is about, you know, you can only carry so many players at X position because you have to go long at Y position. And the defensive line for the Cowboys has been okay for a while. They refer to themselves as the Hot Boys, which a lot of Cowboys fans really hate. But so Dorrance Armstrong is a member of the Hot Boys, and I think he's going to have a really impressive training camp in preseason.
Yeah, and so, I mean, about that, how does kind of this whole pandemic and how that has been affecting the offseason calendar? Do you think that helped or hurts either the new guys or a guy like Dorrance Armstrong, who is trying to stay on the team, like not having the offseason activities? Does that help those guys, or does it make it harder to kind of evaluate them, and some of them might end up getting, you know, lost because they can't show some of that improvement or kind of those skills that you think that they might need to?
Well, and I'm sure I speak for you here. You know, it's hard to say that anybody or anything has helped, you know, in these times, you know, obviously, but the reality is, you know, situations are created that benefit others more than some. And so I think there will be people that do benefit from, you know, the inability to meet. And I certainly think there will be people that are hindered by it. And I think that Dorrance Armstrong could be in that latter category. The Cowboys are obviously in a unique spot in that they have a brand new head coach. They have a brand new defensive coordinator. They have a brand new defensive line coach. Jim Tomsula is regarded as one of sort of the more incredible defensive line coaches throughout the NFL, and he's now in charge of the Cowboys defensive line group. So that's both good news for Dorrance Armstrong, and that he obviously, you know, has somebody fantastic to learn from. But it's also, you know, I don't want to say troubling, but, you know, he could like a particular skill set. And that's kind of what I talked about earlier. We are, you know, at Blogging the Boys, we're having a lot of fun trying to put this puzzle together. I know a lot of people have done some literal puzzles these days, but because, you know, the Cowboys were coached by Jason Garrett for a decade, and so we knew everything that Jason Garrett liked, you know, and that made it fun in a lot of ways, but they were predictable in terms of styles, in terms of techniques, in terms of qualities, and in terms of traits. So we were very able to quickly figure out what they would or would not go for, what they would or would not tolerate. And so it's hard to know if Jim Tomsula, the defensive line coach, is going to like what Dorrance Armstrong offers. So with all of that up in the air, I think you know, the Cowboys did draft a rookie, you know, edge player in this year's draft in the fifth round, Utah's Bradley Anae. And so there's not a lot of competition. It just depends really on how deeply the Cowboys want to go at defensive line, because Dorrance Armstrong's part of that rotation. And he, at this point, he's quality depth, and they don't have a lot of that. So I'd say his spot's about 60% safe. But, you know, NFL roster building is a tricky thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also kind of depends on, you know, did they draft him because they really liked his potential and they saw enough there, you know, that they really want to get him in there? Or was it more of a, they saw some potential that they could, you know, try to develop, and if everything goes right, then it's really going to be an honest battle. And I think that's, like you said, it's one of the difficulties of a brand new, you know, a brand new coaching staff and the way they like to do things. You know, over at Kansas, we've kind of seen that quite a few times with all the changes we've had. And you're trying to look at the way that different, you know, teams or different coordinators want to really run things. It's hard enough to determine who's going to be a starter, you know, or who's going to, you know, like there's not really a question about whether the guy remains on the team or not. It's who's actually going to get the playing time. Whereas here, you know, in the NFL, it's who makes the roster to then have the opportunity to get the playing time. And so I definitely understand that it's a little bit more difficult, especially when you're changing, you know, changing coaching staff. And then also on top of that, they're not going to get that normal evaluation. I guess what I'm kind of wondering though is, you know, are there specific guys who maybe, you know enough about them that you're willing to keep them when you can't truly evaluate some of these younger guys? Or is this kind of a situation where you know that you're not getting what you want from some of the older guys, and maybe, you know, even though you can't really truly evaluate them because of the current conditions, you like that potential and you like what you think you can mold them into better than some of the guys that are kind of standing there? And I guess part of that also depends on how long this pandemic and the lockdown from it goes.
Right.
Because if you get to a point where you are jumping immediately into games after, you know, a 4 or 5 week ramp up and we're already kind of late, you know, that would have a different effect, I think, on how you weigh those two possibilities than if we, you know, maybe if mini camp starts, you know, 2 weeks late or something like that, and you still kind of have a full evaluation period. So are there any guys though, specifically, that kind of jump out to you like that, that could have any kind of effect on whether, you know, the Kansas guys either make the roster or get to stick around?
Well, so, you know, obviously if Kamara is evaluated as an edge rusher truly by the Cowboys, that I think makes his road a little bit more difficult. But I'll answer that like this. I would place the following edge rushers, higher on what I think would be the Cowboys depth chart. You've obviously got DeMarcus Lawrence, Tyrone Crawford. Assuming they'd get reinstated, I would put both Randy Gregory and Alden Smith above them, above Dorrance, excuse me. And I would put the team's newly drafted fifth round rookie Bradley Anae, and I would put last year's fifth round rookie, Joe Jackson, who they drafted out of the University of Miami. And the reason for that is so much of the NFL is about, you know, salary cap manipulation and, you know, cheap labor, you know, relative to what you're doing here. And so Joe Jackson was drafted a year after Dorrance Armstrong, which means he has a year longer on his rookie contract, which means he has one more extra year than Dorrance Armstrong does of team control at a modest rate. And that's, you know, if a team is splitting hairs, you know, let's call it that, between Joe Jackson and Dorrance Armstrong, and if you have, you know, an double the time left of Joe Jackson on rookie contract money, which is significantly less than whatever Dorrance Armstrong's second contract in the NFL ends up being, then I would say 9 times out of 10, the team tends to lean with a player who they have cheaper roster control of for the longer amount of time. Right. And so that's just the unfortunate reality, you know, of business in the NFL.
Yep. No, I understand how all that works. It's kind of unfortunate, but it also, you know, obviously that's kind of one of the biggest things and the easiest way. You know, a team like the Chiefs, who a lot of Kansas fans are probably used to rooting for, that's how they've kind of made their, you know, made their runs that they've had, is by making good decisions on who to stick around and where to find cheap talent and all of that. And so, you know, the more successful teams, they have to get very, very adept at that. So I definitely understand that. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of these Kansas players don't have the high pedigree that warrants sticking around if there's a cheaper option who's considered to be, you know, at least comparable. You know, I think that's kind of what happened to a guy like Daniel Wise, who, you know, we were talking a little bit before we got started here. You know, he was signed on an undrafted free agent deal last year, stuck around with the Cowboys for a good portion of the year, And actually, I believe you were saying he actually got cut as part of the off-season, stuff. He was on their practice squad last year, if I remember correctly, and just was not retained going into this year. It sounds like that was probably something similar with him that you know, development-wise, they were interested, but just there wasn't enough there to kind of keep him around. Does that sound about right?
It does. And, you know, and again, it's an interesting situation this particular time because the Cowboys have largely ignored prioritizing the defensive tackle position. That's something that a lot of our readers and listeners have had a problem with for a long time. And, you know, last year they drafted Tristan Hill out of Central Florida in the second round, although he was a really, really big disappointment. In fact, I think that most people probably were more pleased with Daniel Wise despite really not doing anything for the team than they were Tristan Hill. But this offseason, the team has drastically changed their approach to that. They signed Joe McCoy and Dontari Poe, both who were playing with the Carolina Panthers last season in free agency. They drafted Neville Gallimore from the University of Oklahoma. So, you know, I think the team just kind of, you know, went into this with a new head coach again and a new defensive coordinator, a new defensive line coach, and said, you know what, enough of that. And, you know, we want to hit the reset button. And oftentimes, you know, new coaches want their guys. And that's just kind of what things kind of end up being. But it's unfortunate. He had a lot of fans, Daniel Wise. That was one of those that, you know, last year, that hour after the draft, people were really hyped to see him agree to terms with the Cowboys, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand that. Well, RJ, thanks for joining us today. For those that want to kind of keep up with the Cowboys, especially to see how these Kansas guys stick with the team or don't stick with the team, where can they find your work online?
You can find all of our Cowboys coverage at bloggingtheboys.com. Our podcast feed, you can search for Blogging the Boys on every podcast network that you get this fantastic show. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RJ Ochoa. I keep it nice and simple. And you can find me in my kitchen about every third day getting a peanut butter and banana sandwich because that's kind of what it comes down to.
All right, RJ, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
And that'll do it for today's episode. Big thanks to RJ for coming on. I don't know if we're normally going to have intros like this. I know that our next episode is not. I'm kind of switching things up the summer season. We'll be playing with things. We might have some new intro and outro music coming in at some point over the summer. So be looking forward to a lot of the changes that are coming. They're kind of going to roll out slowly as opposed to being all at once like I was expecting, but stay tuned for that. If you guys haven't already, do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, the other million apps that are out there. Subscribe to the podcast. You can do that by searching for Rock Chalk Talk. And if you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, it'd be great. If not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to give you guys all the information that you need, and maybe even some information you didn't know you needed. So, if you ever have anyone you want us to try to interview, any comments, questions, suggestions, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. But that'll do it. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.